Welcome to AUSA's Army Matters podcast. This is Family Voices with Patty Barron. It's my pleasure to have as our guest today George W., a retired U.S. Army officer and member of Alcoholics Anonymous Committee for Cooperation with the Professional Committee. He works to carry the AA message to the armed forces and veterans communities through his work with AA. George, welcome. We are honored to have you on our podcast.
Patty, good morning. Thank you for this opportunity to be of service. I'm grateful.
Terrific. And George, you and I first met over the phone about 6 months ago. At that time, you shared the great work you're doing with our military and veterans community, and it centers around a very personal story about your struggles with and triumphs over alcohol addiction. Can you share that story with our audience?
Sure. Thank you, Patty. I was commissioned in the Army in 1976 through ROTC. I was an armor officer. I underwent airborne and ranger training. I served in a couple tank battalions along the way. I was a public affairs officer. I served in Grenada in 1983. I studied French at DLI. I went to the Supreme Headquarters Allied Powers, where I served for 3 years there. I served again in a tank battalion 15 miles from the Iron Curtain as the S3 and XO, after which I did a training with industry gig, and I served with Army recruiting as a senior staff officer and then a special recruiting battalion commander. It looked like a successful career on the surface. And while I didn't have a pathway to be chief of staff in the Army, I was optimistic about my continued service in the late 90s. My problem was drinking. I drank every day. This was certainly in the 90s when I returned from Germany after the end of the Cold War. But I drank every day, and I drove drunk, and I would drink more when I got home. It came to pass that I did not always adhere to the Army values, and there was an informal investigation launched into my off-duty conduct, which found that I was not in keeping with the highest traditions of military service. As a result of that, I was relieved of my duties as a battalion commander 2 days before the change of command ceremony. And I got my last evaluation report in the mail, and the closing comments were, "Lieutenant Colonel W. should never be recalled to active duty, even in the event of a national emergency." My wife and I tried counseling to repair our marriage. That didn't work, but I did continue therapy, and my counselor was gently pushing me to seek some help to address my drinking. I went in that direction very slowly until October 1998, when I was on a 4-day business trip to Washington, D.C. from Louisville. I returned to my office, and there were two Jefferson County Sheriff's deputies at my workplace, and they told me that my wife had taken out an emergency protective order, and that if I made any contact with her or went within 500 feet of my home, I'd be jailed for 30 days. I went to family court hearing. I was subjected to a litany of bad alcoholic behavior that brought me to tears. Of course, it was all true, and I deserved every bit of it. And that's when I finally hit my lowest bottom, and I got help at a place called Baptist Hospital East here in Louisville, Kentucky. I learned about the disease of alcoholism. I started going to meetings, and then in the first 12 months after leaving intensive outpatient program, I did 513 AA meetings. I went to aftercare at the hospital one night a week for 6 months. I joined what's called a Men's Step Study Group. And for 8 months, I lived with another alcoholic who I'd met in IOP. As much as I wanted our marriage to get fixed and work out, that didn't happen. But I do take full responsibility for the pain I caused to my wife and our marriage. And I accepted the loss of dignity and professional prestige that had come to my life as a result of my drinking. I continued to work hard to stay sober and be of service. My life started to turn around slowly. I did get a chance to remarry again in 2004 at the age of 50. And as I grew in sobriety, I became less saddened by the thoughts about the end of my Army career. Even though I was honorably discharged and I did get a retirement check, I was long embarrassed by what had happened and the black cloud under which I had left the Army. In 2006, the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq were raging, and the Army's personnel system was stretched and challenged. And one night I read about the retiree recall program. I took a chance. I applied for that. And 2 months later, I shipped out to the mobilization station at Fort Benning, Georgia. I was assigned to work at the Pentagon, and I was in the Army Operations Center for a year, working 13-hour shifts, four on and four off. A year later, I applied for a position with the Media Relations Department in Army Public Affairs, where I was a team chief. And then I later became, after I transitioned to civil service after 3 years on active duty, I became a civil servant and was later promoted to deputy director for media relations, where I dealt with a very major issue that faced the Army. So it's been quite a journey for someone who had been relieved of his duties just a few years before. I retired from full-time work in 2017, returned to Louisville, and I'm still involved in AA. I go to four or five meetings a week still. I'm on the board of directors for a local 12-step clubhouse, and in 2018, I was asked to do this service work for AA. So I'm really grateful for this opportunity to tell my story and to tell your listeners more about this important program.
It's an amazing story, George, and we're so grateful that you're able to share it with us and our listeners. One of the things that you said kind of caught my attention. It seems like you'd been drinking for quite some time during your career, and yet do you feel that anyone ever noticed, or did you hide it very well? And I'm wondering how that might have worked.
Sure. I thought about that a number of times after I did get sober. No one ever challenged me about my drinking. No one pulled me aside and said, "Hey, George, you need to lay off the sauce." No one ever suggested I start going to meetings. Although one of my subordinates years later, I discovered, was also sober, and they told me that, there were a couple of times we thought about talking to you, but that step was never taken, and I'm okay with that. I look back and I do the what if game, but that's not something that's healthy for me. I recognize that even God can't change the past, and so I am where I am, and I'm grateful for all the obstacles I was able to overcome.
That's really a good point about having no one really come forward to say, "I think I see a problem, and how can I help you, or you need to get support for this problem." Why do you think people are hesitant to approach someone when they think there's a problem?
Well, it was a different Army in those days. I mean, there was in the mid-80s, General Wickham, who was the chief of staff, introduce a program to deglamorize alcohol. He did away with the two-for-one thing at the club system, the right arm nights, the beef and burgundy. And so the Army was slowly moving in that direction. But there were still some, I think, issues with stigma and some concerns with confronting alcohol use in the ranks. It's hard to say. There may be some commanders who, and I'm sure there are, who are very, very open and very concerned about their soldiers and their officers and their NCOs to make sure that they can be all they can be. But in my case, no one ever said anything. I never drank during the day. I never drank at lunch. Didn't have a bottle in my desk drawer. I compartmentalized my drinking pretty well. But I did drink every night, and I drank to get drunk, and it ruined my marriage, and it ruined my career towards the very end.
Oh well, George, you're sharing your struggles openly. It takes an awful lot of courage, and you are very inspiring to me and to many people. If you had to map out vital steps to any of our listeners who might have a loved one dealing with addiction, what would you tell them?
Sure. It's tough, but I would give them as much encouragement as I would be able to. There's a companion program to Alcoholics Anonymous called Al-Anon. That's Al-Anon. It's a 12-step program modeled on the recovery for alcoholics, and it's designed for friends and family and loved ones of people who have a drinking problem to meet and to talk about how they can stay serene and whole in the face of someone whose drinking is out of control. Each story is unique. There are many success stories, but there are many situations that can't be overcome. And sometimes there comes a point when the family has to do what it has to do to simply survive. And that's certainly what happened in my situation with my wife at the time. She had enough. She had told me at one point she would be supportive and encouraging in my efforts to get sober. My problem was I just didn't get sober soon enough to get that support. And that's okay. I accept it all.
And it does affect the entire family, doesn't it? It's not an isolated disease where you go through it alone. It affects every single person that you love and come in contact with, I imagine.
Exactly. There are trust issues. There are faith issues. One wonders whether one made the right decision. There are parenting issues, discipline issues, and it's just a mess. A marriage is hard enough as it is without having to deal with active alcoholism. And my heart goes out to anyone who's in that situation today. But there is help.
Absolutely. And I think that just as it was, it took courage for you to come to terms with your alcoholism. It would also also takes a lot of courage for a family member to come to terms with the fact that they can't help and that they have to take care of themselves, because ultimately that's what you have to do. What about the service member, George? It took you a long time to come to terms with your alcoholism, to kind of realize that there was a problem. And when the time came for you to turn for help, AA was there for you. How did you find them, and what was the first step that you took, and why did you keep going?
Well, toward the end of my drinking, I would often look in the mirror first thing in the morning, and I'd say what we say, the alcoholic prayer: God help me, I can't go on like this, I've got to stop. And I would vow to quit drinking. And by noon, when the hangover would subside, I'd start to thinking, well, maybe I'll just have a couple tonight. Maybe this time it'll be different. But it never was. That first drink led to a second one, and then I would just continue drinking until it was time to go to bed. When I did hit bottom, this counselor that I had been seeing, I called him and I told him that I was a drowning man in need of a life preserver. And so he said, okay, I'll make some calls. And he called the Baptist Hospital East here in Louisville and made some arrangements. And he called me later that day and said, show up tomorrow. It was November 11th of 1998. And I went there. And I eventually enrolled in their intensive outpatient program. We met Monday through Thursday, 6 to 9 p.m., small group discussion, and I learned about the disease of alcoholism and what it does to the brain and the nervous system. And they strongly encouraged us to find Alcoholics Anonymous. They told us where the local 12-step clubhouse was. They told us about some meetings that were in our neighborhoods that we could go and meet some people. And I started to do that. It took about 6 weeks for me to fully concede to my innermost self that, yes, I am an alcoholic, and I really do need these rooms. So I quit bargaining with myself and this terrible disease, and I started to get to more meetings.
And George, How important is it for someone that thinks they, and I would imagine at some point deep down inside, you knew that there was a problem. You mentioned the alcoholic prayer, looking in the mirror going, I've got to stop. This is ridiculous. I can't go on like this. How important is it for someone like that to have someone that they can reach out to in their back pocket? Because when the time comes when you hit bottom and you think, I've got to reach out to someone, it could be a moment. And then when it passes, it could be months before you're there again. Would you say to someone, make sure you have in your back pocket someone you can reach out to?
Well, I mean, we in the Army, we long talk about the buddy system and battle buddies and accountability and looking out for your buddy, never leaving a fallen comrade. That is so important. And the trust that comes with a lifetime of service or a career of service, or the relationships that we have in units are very important. There was one moment, when I was stationed at Fort Knox, I actually picked the phone up and I called the Fort Knox Hospital and was connected to the behavioral health clinic. And I started a conversation that lasted a couple of minutes, and I lost my courage and I hung up. So that was a moment of clarity that was lost. But for any of your listeners that may be tuned in now, there is help. You can get that help from initially your chaplain. You can talk to him or her about all of your problems. But certainly if you have a problem with drinking, chaplains are well equipped to provide that moment of need service. If you've got a computer, and most everyone has access to it, there's the resource called AA.org. You can go online and there's an icon and link called Find a Meeting, and you can tap your zip code or location in, and there will be presented to you a list of local meetings. And there's also a phone number where you can call the central office, and it'll be a complete stranger, but when you connect with them, you'll be amazed by how much that person on the other end of the line knows about you, about your what might be pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, how you may be lost and hopeless and uncertain and fearful, and how your skin might be crawling, and if you don't take a drink, you're going to die. But as active alcoholics who have the disease in the advanced phases of their life, to continue to drink is to die. And so it's important to get help and to get that that peer-to-peer relationship and encouragement and support to learn from another person who has gone through this on what it takes to stay sober. And there are people out there, and we haven't met them yet, but they're going to be the friendliest, most helpful people in the life of someone who's early in recovery.
That's extremely encouraging, and it does take an enormous amount of courage to take that first step and keep going. I'm really glad that you did. And that leads me to ask you about your current role with the AA Committee for Cooperation. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. In 2018, I've been back in Louisville for about 6 months, and a friend of mine who I had met years before, before I went to went back in the Army, showed me a service position announcement at AA headquarters. The qualifications for which were 5 years of sobriety, veteran status, and a familiarity with the Department of Defense and Department of Veterans Affairs, Public Affairs systems. I had considerable experience in DOD, and specifically Army Public Affairs. So I talked with my friend and my sponsor, my guide at Alcoholics Anonymous, and they both encouraged me to apply. And so I was interviewed and accepted for the position as an appointed committee member on the Committee for Cooperation with the Professional Community. And as such, my portfolio is to work with the Department of Defense and the VA to try to open doors at the senior levels to increase awareness about the maximum effective range and bursting radius of an AA group, if you will, what we do, what we don't do, how we can be of service, but also to help the local group that might want to carry its message to, say, a Coast Guard installation or a post camp or base in any of the services, if there are some obstacles there at the local level, they might come up on the net, and I might make a phone call to officials at that local installation to introduce myself as retired Army officer and recovering alcoholic, and to encourage them to work with their local AA groups to help their servicemen and women. So that's what I do. I go to New York City four times a year. I'll be attending the International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous in Detroit next July to tell my story and to report to the fellowship about my activities. It's a great service opportunity, and I'm very grateful, and it's been a great honor to be of continued service. So there's that.
Well, you definitely have a servant's heart. Someone that, I mean, think about, when I think about your story and how you originally left the military, and to have the courage to go back and see if you could continue to serve during a time of war, which you were able to do. I'm not surprised that you're involved in this committee for cooperation. Are you making traction? Are you getting to the senior levels like you would like to?
It's been slow, but I've tried to be persistent. Next week, I'll be going to Nashville to a joint DOD VA suicide prevention conference. One of my former bosses is a senior official at the VA, and I saw a post on his Twitter account, and so I wrote him a note right away about this conference, and he connected me with some people, so I'll go there next week, and I'll be at a breakout session to tell my story of recovery, and also just as important, to tell the story about what Alcoholics Anonymous can do and how to reach us. So I'm hopeful that that opportunity will continue to assist in spreading the awareness. So the SecDef will be there, the secretary of the VA will be there, and I'm hoping to get a chance to meet them and see where this leads us.
Absolutely. And we are honored that we can help you spread the word of hope and also help. But how can other organizations help you do the same? What more can be done?
Well, Patty, thank you. And again, I want to thank you for this opportunity to be of service and to reach out to your listeners and to your organizations throughout the country. Army leaders and service agencies in the Army can learn more about what we do by going to AA.org. There are AA groups near you. You can find us there on the website. There's contact information for regional offices that Army installations and service agencies can reach out to bring a cooperation with a professional community representative at that level. So we're nationwide. We've got a chain of command, so to speak, and we're here to help. So I can carry this message at the national level, but there are people at the local level who can reach out to installation commanders and service agencies throughout the country as well.
That's really good information, and we'll make sure that we put that website on the paragraph that describes this podcast so people can access it. Absolutely. And in the time that we have left, George, do you have any last thoughts or messages that you want to give to our audience?
Sure. Well, I'll say that getting sober is not easy. It took me a while to fully concede to my innermost self. I've learned that alcoholic bottoms have trap doors. it's an elevator that just keeps going in one direction, and that's down. Alcoholism also knows no boundaries with regard to rank, and one of the obstacles I faced was how could I as a battalion commander sit in a circle of junior enlisted people, servicemen and women, and say, you know, I'm George and I'm an alcoholic. That was a big obstacle for me, and I was never able to overcome that obstacle when I was on active duty my first 21 years. But one of the miracles of my recovery was my opportunity to return to active duty in 2006, and I did meetings at the Pentagon in uniform with some NCOs. There were a couple of junior enlisted personnel there. And there were a couple of Navy captains that would come in and out of those meetings over the many years I was at the Pentagon. And we checked our rank at the door, and we talked openly and honestly with each other. And we had a wonderful relationship. So if you're listening today and you have a problem with alcohol and you don't know how to quit, I would encourage you to find help. AA may not be for everyone. I've heard that over the almost 21 years I've been sober, but it's worked for me and it's worked for many of my friends. And if you are a senior officer or a senior NCO and you can't wrap your head around saying, I'm George and I'm an alcoholic in a room full of your subordinates, contact Patty, contact AUSA. They've got a way to get in touch with me, and I can we can talk on the phone or by email, and we can try to stay sober one day at a time together.
George, it has been a pleasure to have you on this podcast. This message is incredibly important. It affects so many people that are hiding in the shadows and are living a life that, you know, they wish could be better. And I'm just so grateful that you've been able to come on the show with us today. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Patty. I've had a great time. I love to tell my story. I love to spread the story about Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope to be able to do it again in the future with a larger audience.
Fantastic. Well, folks, we've come to the end of our podcast episode. To all our listeners, thank you for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. Keep it locked here for all Army Matters and for next week's episode featuring Army thought leaders. I am Patty Barron with Family Voices. Family strong, Army strong.